The Touchdown City Show is presented by Masters Law Firm, West Virginia's personal injury lawyers, and Parmar Stores. If there's not a Parmar store near you now, there will be one soon. Coming to you from the Stone Church Studio in St. Albans, West Virginia, this is the Touchdown City Show.
Welcome back to the Touchdown City Show. I'm Anthony Lewis, and I appreciate you guys taking the opportunity to check out the show this week. And as promised, joining us to celebrate the 30th anniversary of the undefeated 1993 regular season at West Virginia is Mr. Aaron Beasley. Aaron, how are you, man?
I'm good, Anthony. How you doing, brother?
I'm doing well. I'm doing well. And we were talking a little bit before we hit the air here today. And you were saying you're down in Jacksonville now.
Yeah, I'm down here making some moves, trying to help the community, getting back involved in the Jacksonville Jaguars a little bit.
Yeah,
it's pretty cool.
That's where you started your career.
Yeah, man. You know, and it's funny because, you know, I went to a Jaguars Pittsburgh game. It was 1995, and my cousin was actually was the D-back, or excuse me, the defensive coordinator for the Steelers, Tim Lewis.
Mm-hmm.
And I go to the game. Jacksonville got beat 28-3, and it was like, you know, just being there, seeing it, just like, man, it's like how close these games are. Even though the score was that bad, it was like a couple of plays. It's like you realize how, you know, fine this game is. It's a fine-tuned game. Like one little mistake can turn to the momentum the other way, and it can go downhill quick.
Absolutely. Game of inches. Well, let's talk about it. You know, as I mentioned, it's the 30th anniversary of the undefeated 93 season at West Virginia. First of all, does it feel like it's been 30 years for you?
It zipped by, but I mean, I still can remember some of those great plays from that year. You know, we had a lot of great vets, a lot of great leadership. I was just playing my role. You know, people don't even realize I ran cross country in 10th grade. I didn't even play football. So football was just like a hobby.
Right.
And, you know, but when I got out there, you know, Mike Collins took me under his wing. You know, all the DBs took me under their wing, and I just would watch and learn. And, you know, I got to play in so many big games because back then the Big East was, I mean, we were tough. It was a tough conference. We were putting a lot of guys into the league.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And it's funny, I went back yesterday and so there was, I was doing some reading and kind of watching some of the highlight films and just trying to reacquaint myself with the way the season went. And one of the things that stood out to me is I went back and just kind of researched that group of players. Most of the same guys from 92, minus maybe like Compton and Adrian Morrell. Yep. But it was most of the same guys. But I mean, you're talking about within a year, this team grew up a whole lot and learned how to overcome adversity and win close ball games. Can you just talk about the transformation from 92 to 93?
Oh, man, it was something because there was such a salty taste in our mouth because we left so many games out there. I mean, I think we had like two ties that year, my freshman year, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like the last game against Rutgers. It was like that taste sat in our mouth the whole offseason. That was going into the 93 year, man. It was like everybody was working. It was like everybody was pushing to go for that, you know, that next level of where we can be. Cause we had so many great players. I mean, our receiver room was good. Our running back, every room, there were some great players. And, you know, it was fun because, you know, like I said, man, I would just be out there competing and going against like Mike Baker, going against Jay Kearney and Ed Hill every day at practice. Man, that was lessons learned every day.
Well, it's funny. I was having a conversation with a good friend of mine last night. We were talking about that season, and it dawned on me as I was doing some of the research that that's probably one of the most underrated receiving corps in WVU history. I mean, you had three guys that were solid wide receivers, and Kearney could fly. you know, mm-hmm. and Ed Hill was going to catch. I mean, it was just they're definitely underrated.
Oh man, it was like it's kind of like when I went to the NFL. It was like, you know, every receiver role, of course, in the NFL because just the skill level. But I felt like I was going against pros every day. You know, Mike Baker. He had the energy, man. We were scrappy dogs. Like, it was funny. He gave me a nickname because my arms were so long. You know, I would come to practice every day like it was game day because I knew who I had to go against. So my mentality was like, every play is game day. So I'd come out there dressed up like it was a game, and I used to act like prime time out there at practice, you know, and he gave me the nickname Leon Long Limbs. And he would just say it all the time. You know, just, you know, playing against guys like that, you know, you do your one-on-ones and, you know, you got stalk blocking drills, and it's like, we competed, man. Mm-hmm. And so it was like, when you went to a game, you were ready because you would have went against the best all week.
You know, one of the things, obviously, offenses are totally different today. Teams are putting up 35, 45, 55 points a game. In that era, you guys won some close games, 17-14 a couple weeks. But one of the things that really stood out to me about this team as I went back and looked at it was in that era, everyone talks about the 96 defense, and rightfully so, obviously number one in the nation. But that group of guys before them, there were some dogs on that team. I mean, you're looking around. Could you just talk about the guys that you played with and again, probably underrated defense in the West Virginia era?
And that's the thing, like, you know, in that era, we were so blue collar. Like, all of us were like, you know, the also-rans. We weren't the 4 stars and the 5 stars, but we were like blood and guts type of players, you know, like all of us come from different backgrounds, of course, but like we all come from, you know, we all come from like hard work, mm-hmm. and, you know, playing with guys like Perk, Barry Hawkins holding up the front, Canute got in there. We had Wiley. I mean, we had talent, man. I was so surprised that not a lot of guys got drafted from that defense, man. I swore Mike Collins was a first, second round safety. You know, he made plays. I mean, he made tackles, but you know, up there, they want to see you make plays and all that interception stats rule, you know. But Mike Collins was an NFL player. I played there. I see Mike Collins next to me. Mm-hmm. He belonged up there. I mean, it's like that's the thing, too. You know, guys like that, it trickled down into those next years, you know, because I was really supposed to be a part of that 96 defense, but I played as a true freshman.
Right.
But, you know, it trickled down because – you know, Perlo came in and filled my spot, but like it was the same mentality. Like our defense ran things, like at practice, at games. I mean, we were like true defensive team back then.
Yeah, I mean, just going across there. I mean, obviously, you in 93, you were playing as a sophomore. You know, Mike Logan's there. Van Washington is, of course, there playing behind Mike. Mm-hmm. What, I mean, just what a great group of guys, and that defense will definitely. It's kind of good that this is coming around because it's giving me a new respect for this football team that I've always respected. But as time goes by, you maybe forget some of the little things that this group of guys brought to the table. Let's talk a little bit about you know, just the fact that it went week by week. And there was always something. John Jones gets hurt. Jake pulls a hamstring. And there's just something week after week, a new challenge for this team. But you guys were able to overcome week by week and roll up 11 victories in the regular season.
That speaks a lot about Coach Neely. You know, the recruiting back then, you know, we had guys that were ready to play. You know, the second string, he came in, you didn't see too much of a drop-off. So, you know, and that's one thing, like we practiced so hard and to me it was fun. I used to have fun every day. And I think it carried over because our energy always went onto that field of like, just we can't lose. We won't lose just because we believe so much. I mean, you think about even the last game, that Boston College game, you know, we were down and out. And Ed Hill made that touchdown. Logue sealed the game with the pick. I still got that picture of him on the knee with that ball up. I mean, that's looking across the field. I'm like, man, that's like the amigos. You know, we came in together, all four of us, the four amigos. And it was such an honor to play behind, you know, the older guys. I played with them, but then at the same time, once those guys left, I mean, that energy from the guys before us, it carried on.
Absolutely. And you talk about Boston College, and we just have a couple minutes left here on the radio, and we'll continue the podcast. For the listeners, you can always go back and listen to the extended interview on the podcast version of this, but let's briefly talk about Boston College. You guys are down 14-3, I believe, late with 8 minutes to go in the fourth quarter. Mm-hmm. And it just happens. You know, they fumble, you know, Darren leads you guys down the field. What was that experience like, the comeback? And do you remember what was going on the sideline?
Guys, it started off, we were so flat. I felt like, you know, we had the pressure because, you know, we win, we're undefeated, and, you know, we seal the deal. Hopefully we get into the national championship. But we just kept fighting, man. And it's a testament of that whole season. You know, there was a lot of games like that all we did was just keep fighting, never stop playing, play till that clock says zero. That was our mentality. And it was like we made a couple clutch plays. I dropped the pick six. Oh, that game too. But, you know, just certain things. And then at the same time, I made a tackle, and I just had the guy's shirt, but luckily, because he would have scored. It's like you just think sometimes there's little things that save games, and, you know, it's just playing to the end. You know, that's all we did all year.
A lot of seniors on this football team. A group of guys that had been through it the year before, as we mentioned. And before we went to the commercial break, you were talking about, well, when we started our conversation, you were talking about the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Jacksonville Jaguars, and you talked about how literally a game of inches, and if it doesn't go your way, the outcome can be really lopsided. And then before the break, you were talking about how you had a guy's jersey, and had he got away from you, you probably would not have won that game. But can you just talk a little bit about, you know, coming into the season and what you guys expected? You still had two quarterbacks. What was the quarterback situation like? I know you were on the defensive side of the ball, but was it a relief to know that you had two guys that could lead this football team in Darren Studstill and Jake Kelchner?
Oh, most definitely. You know, because my perspective is it was like, you know, because you can't tackle the quarterback in practice or whatever, but, like, you had Stud with the athleticism, still could sling the ball. Then you had Jake. I mean, Jake just was a natural gun. I mean, he came from a passing family tree up in Berwick. And, I mean, it was like either way, you're going against a tough quarterback. It's funny. I was talking to somebody yesterday. It was like, because I go back to my senior year. Like, my senior year, Mark Bolger was our scout quarterback.
Yeah.
He was going against four dudes that made it to the NFL, you know?
Right.
So it built his character. So it was like the same for us. You know, when we're going against these guys one-on-ones, and every rep, it was serious because both quarterbacks were, you know, hired guns.
Yeah. And, you know, there is a saying that if you have two quarterbacks, you don't have one. But I always put that asterisk out beside that because I've always refer back to Jake and Darren Studstill. I'm always like, well, that's true, except for in this case, because they had two that were able to lead this team when they needed someone to create a spark or move the team forward.
And that's one thing, like, there was never any controversy among them. You know, Jake would get his reps, Stud would get his. And sometimes Coach went with the hot hand. Then sometimes when somebody wasn't, you know, when Jake wasn't on, Stud could just come right in and just be ready.
Yeah.
You know, Stud was ready at all times, and it was evident. I mean, you watch some of those games, he'd come off the bench cold, slinging it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's talk about 1993 Miami. Obviously, it was late in the season. It was a November game, freezing cold in Morgantown. I don't know how you ever felt about the cold weather. It was cold that day. And was that probably one of the biggest regular season college games for you, or even college games period?
Oh, most definitely. I mean, that was the national game. It was ABC. I think it was Keith Jackson, Old Nelly. Mm-hmm. You know, it was like, that's what you dream of as a kid. You know, you watch football and you see these nationally televised games. It's like, that's when people have the opportunity to show their skills. And, you know, we had that urgency, man. Like, we lost to them the year before pretty bad, and down there in Miami. And it was like that taste was on our mouth the whole year, because now they're going to come on our terms. They're going to play with a little bit of cold weather. We'll see how they like to deal with this. You know, down in Miami, it's still warm. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know, they came up there, and I think their heaters were broke, all that, you know, all those good little tricks that home teams play.
What do you remember? You know, obviously back in those days, the roster was full of South Florida guys. Mm-hmm. What do you remember about that group of guys and leading into that game? I know they always have a little extra bounce in their step when the Hurricanes were coming to town.
Oh, man, the practices were intense. You know, all the Florida boys all they're talking about is they want to show the crib. You know, they used to call it the crib. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's all they talk about. You know, Puppy, Gallimore, Perk, you know, all those guys grew up with all these Miami players. And, you know, they didn't want to go back home without winning against Miami. That's, you know, that's one thing. Like, the Florida guys always wanted to win that Miami game.
What do you remember about the celebration that night?
Not much. I wasn't of age, but I don't remember much.
Right.
No, but I mean, it was just wild, man. It was like surreal, you know, because I mean, the U back then was the school. You know, that's when nobody knew about all those Florida boys, and now you know they were winning national championships. I think they just came off a national championship loss to Alabama the year before, so. It's like they were always in the hunt, and that game was always a red letter game because they were the lead dog in the Big East back then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and when we were on the air on the radio broadcast, we were talking about Boston College and sealing that up. One of the things, you know, they talk a lot about Mountaineer fans, and you still travel the country with the guys and do the alumni events and mm-hmm. the golf tournaments, and you guys are out doing the thing with Joe Zwiak, and it's 30 years later, Mountaineer fans still remember and show a lot of love. But one of the things that stood out to me, and let me know if you even remember this, was when you guys got back from Boston College, there were all those people were at the Postcard Center waiting for you guys.
Oh man, that was awesome. You know, that's like love, because the Mountaineers are like, we're like the pro team of the state, you know? So it was like, it was surreal, man. You come in, I think it was even lined up going up the hill, man. Everybody just looking out of the buses like, man, these people love us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it was a special time. It was a special era. I mean, you know, I started really paying attention as a 10-year-old in like 86. So I grew up with the 85, 86, 87, 88 team. You go undefeated. And then as a 12-year-old kid in my head, I'm thinking, well, they should go undefeated every, you know, couple of years. They got this thing rolling, not knowing how it really all works. But then, you know, a few years later, you turn around and it happens again. And, you know, what a special era in Coach Nealon's. I really think that second undefeated regular season cemented his legacy as far as being a Hall of Fame coach.
Oh, yeah.
Because he was able to take, as you said, guys that were under-recruited, blue-collar, and compete on a national level. Not once, but twice. Can you just talk a little bit about Coach Nealon's, when you think about Coach Nealon and his legacy and your relationship with him, what does he mean to you?
Man, Coach means the world to me, man. It's like, I get emotional talking about it because, you know, he came to my house because I went to Valley Forge Military and I was home for the weekend, and he came to my house, him, Kurt Lavage, and This was when my grandmother was alive, and my grandmother had a broke finger, kind of like Coach Nealon's, and they were sitting there comparing fingers, and it was like, I knew my grandma loved Coach. It was like, that almost sealed the deal right there. Mm-hmm. Like, I was like, I know. I had three schools. It was Boston College, Syracuse, and West Virginia. And it was just more of a family environment. And that's why I chose West Virginia, because I felt like Coach really, like, cares about the person. Some coaches are more concerned about the football player, but, you know, Coach was more like a father figure for a lot of us. And, you know, Coach broke the news when my grandmother passed, and it was like that. It was that 93 season. That was pretty tough for me, because I was ready to just quit, man. I was like, my grandma meant everything to me, but, you know, I just remembered their relationship and how I had to finish what I start. And Coach was very instrumental in, like, just keeping me focused on, you know, life and, you know, just, you know, being a good person and a good player.
What's it like for you now when you see, I know you see some of the guys on a regular basis, but when you get the opportunity to see Logan, Collins, did Jake come out to Joe's Wax tournament this year?
Yep. Well, Jake was out there.
That's probably the first time you've seen him in how long?
I saw him, I thought he came down a couple years ago, but it's like, it's rare when Jake comes down. But I feel like this probably has opened it up for him to be like, yo, man, these are my brothers, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's like, it doesn't matter what era, you know, because dudes from the 70s are my brothers, the 80s are my brothers, you know? It's like, we all have that relationship and that common bond. You know, a lot of guys, the bond is the Mountaineer. I mean, yes, we did play for different coaches, but we always came back. We were always on that sideline. We were always there as a group. I mean, I miss being on that sideline, because we would have like 50 of us there. Mm-hmm. And it was like, we were there to bring that energy to these players, because we do love our school. And I feel like we should always be allowed on that sideline, because we built that program. And it's hard, because when I see other schools and I see the love that they get, you know, a lot of players on the sideline, I'm like, why can't we be like that? Why aren't we on the sideline? So I just feel like, you know, Coach brought so much love to the program, man. It's like everybody's a family member, you know?
Well, Aaron, I'm going to cut you loose, man. I appreciate you taking the opportunity to talk to the listeners and the Mountaineer fans. And of course, it's always good to hear your voice and catch up. I wasn't aware that you had moved back down to Jacksonville, but I'm glad you're going to be out on the road this fall. Hopefully you guys get back to Charleston. I know you guys did a Charleston stop last year. We'll have an opportunity to catch up.
Yeah. Yep. I think we're doing it again this year.
Perfect. Perfect. Yep. Well, I appreciate you taking the time to come on.
Oh, no doubt. Hey, I'll talk to you later, man. Have a great day.
You too, man. Take care. That was Aaron Beasley, legendary Mountaineer Hall of Famer, WVU Sports Hall of Famer Aaron Beasley there, joining us and, of course, celebrating the 30th anniversary of the undefeated WVU football season. It's crazy to think that he, you know, obviously after the fact, that's a name that you know and you recognize, but he was only a sophomore on that team, and that defense was, when you go back and look at it, that defense led the way for that team and created a lot of opportunities for them to pull out some close victories. And as you heard there in Boston College, you know, they were down late with 8 minutes to go and they recover a fumble and then again stop Glenn Foley and those guys heading into the end zone. So the legendary Aaron Beasley, I appreciate him taking time to join us here on the Touchdown City Show podcast. So for you listeners, I want you guys to take this opportunity to subscribe to the show. And then if you can, make sure you review us. And also, please share it. That's how people find out about us. So for the rest of the guys and Aaron Beasley, I'm Anthony Lewis. Thank you for listening to the podcast of the Touchdown City Show.
Visit our new website at touchdowncity.com. The Touchdown City Show is produced by Anthony Lewis in partnership with HD Media, the Charleston Gazette-Mail.